Chapter 1. A Woman I Used to Know. The traffic lights were changing from red to green when I saw her. She was crossing the street in front of us. I almost shouted to the taxi driver to stop. I saw a woman I know, a woman I used to know. I have to talk to her, I explained. Belle was already disappearing among the crowds on their way home from work, but I was sure it was her. I had to follow her, even after all these years, and after all the terrible things. I waited impatiently while the London traffic streamed past. A red wall of buses hid her from me. Then I saw her again, tall and thin, dressed all in black. I noticed something different, though. Her hair had changed color. With a shock, I realized that Belle's hair was gray. The traffic lights changed again, and I went after her. It was sunset, and the sky was red, with heavy, dark clouds. I looked along the Bayswater Road in both directions, but I couldn't see Belle. Perhaps she had walked up Queensway. Then I saw her again in the distance. Her grey hair was arranged on top of her head in the same way Cosette used to have her hair when she first came to the House of Stairs. I hadn't realized that Belle would be free already. Another year at least, I had thought. I wondered, for the first time, would Belle want to see me? I couldn't imagine that she blamed me the way Cosette had blamed me. But did she think I blamed her? I hurried on, up St. Petersburg Place, along Moscow Road, and into Pembridge Square, until finally I knew I had lost her. The sky wasn't red any longer, but a wild, stormy grey. Of course, I was in Notting Hill now, near the Portobello Road. There weren't many people in the streets. It had been different when I first came here. Nearly 20 years ago, the streets had been alive with young people then, wearing long hair and strange clothes, listening to loud music, enjoying a new freedom. I started to walk back, but not the way I had come. I can't pretend I didn't know that those streets would lead me to Archangel Place. As I walked, I thought of Belle. How could I find her? Had she seen me and wanted to hide? I had walked a lot, and my legs began to hurt. It is always the same, the feeling that this may be it, that this is not an ordinary tiredness, but the early warning itself. The usual fear rushed through me. I am not old enough yet to be out of danger. I have never told anybody except Belle and Cosette. Well, naturally, Cosette knew already. Does Belle remember? I told myself, as usual, your legs hurt because you don't take any exercise. Then I came to Archangel Place. I looked down the narrow, short street. At that distance, the House of Stairs appeared unchanged. It was getting dark now. Slowly, I walked down on the opposite side. On summer evenings, when Cosette lived there, people used to sit outside talking and laughing. But Archangel Place has changed. The houses have become modern flats now. And the same thing has happened to the House of Stairs. Someone has changed the front door, but the front garden is the same. Although I couldn't see it, I knew that the back garden would be different. The new owners had obviously been told. I felt sure they had changed things to chase away the awful memory. As I stood there, the central window on the first floor opened, and I saw that Cosette's enormous living room was now separated into smaller rooms. It was a shock, and in my mind I suddenly saw Cosette sitting at her table in that big room, smiling at me with her arms open wide. As I was leaving Archangel Place, a taxi passed, and I got into it. My thoughts returned to Belle. I knew now that I would find her. I thought sadly of her years in prison, the waste of life. Then I remembered the first time I saw Belle, when she walked into the hall at Thornham and told us her husband had shot himself. Chapter 2. Inheritance. I was 14 when they told me. My mother's illness was still hidden, but they had decided to tell me. Of course, they knew it would frighten me and make me unhappy, but I was angry. If they knew the facts, why was I born at all? I told Belle one day in the House of Stairs, but I have never told anybody else. They were my parents, but for a time I didn't want to be their daughter. My mother fell ill, but I was still angry. I turned away from them to somebody who was kind and didn't cause me pain. I turned to Cosette. I had known Cosette all my life. She was married to my mother's cousin, Douglas Kingsley, and lived quite near to us in a large house in Hampstead. Douglas was a rich businessman. Cosette and Douglas had the style of life which is typical of a certain class of rich people. I thought this lifestyle was something they both wanted and had chosen. Later, I began to understand that Douglas had chosen it, not Cosette. I began going to see her in those summer holidays after my parents told me of my inheritance. I was a child still, but she talked to me as if I was an adult, a friend. She knew my parents had told me and thought she could help. Cosette was like that. She welcomed me into her home. We sat in the garden and she talked to me about her plants. She knew all their names, but I never saw her do any work in the garden. She had a gardener for that. In fact, she didn't seem to work at all. She was very good at doing nothing, and liked to sit for hours, not reading or writing, just sitting. In those days, she was a little older than I am now, a little over 40. To me, she seemed extremely old. She was then a large, fair woman, quite fat, with greyish-blue eyes. I soon began visiting her more often. Cosette didn't ask me about the things my parents had told me. She was waiting for me to start talking. When at last I decided to speak, I told her I would never have children. I guessed that she had never had children because of Douglas and his inheritance. In the spring, I spent most of my days with Cosette. Although she was almost 30 years older than me, I enjoyed being with her. I had made Cosette into another mother for myself. And in those days, she didn't seem unhappy when people in shops and restaurants thought she was my mother. She didn't seem to worry about her age then. Later, in Archangel Place, that changed. But at that time, when I was 15, she didn't try to appear younger than she really was. She dressed in unattractive suits, which made her look even older. Years passed. As I grew older, although I always loved her, I began to dislike her appearance. Sometimes, when I took my friend Elsa with me to Cosette's house, we secretly laughed at her untidy hair and ugly clothes. It was cruel, and it is painful for me now to remember, but I am trying to be completely honest. Quite often, she took us into her bedroom and let us try on her expensive clothes and jewelry. That is when I first saw the bloodstone. It was a ring with a dark green stone which had little red lines in it. "It belonged to Douglas's mother," Cosette said. I knew about Douglas's mother and the way she had died, the same way my mother was going to die. Possibly I wasn't as kind to her as she was to me, but I always loved her. When we are young, we are often unkind. At least Cosette never knew. She did not ask for anything from the people she loved. She only wanted to be able to give herself to them and feel safe without the fear that they would betray her. Douglas had never betrayed her. He had loved her and made her safe. She only had to follow the way of life he had chosen. The neighbours, the visits, the dinners, the cleaner, the cook and the gardener, the money and endless free time. Of course, it had to end. Everything does. Although it seemed to me that nothing would ever change for Cosette. One autumn morning, Douglas died in his Rolls Royce on the way to work. He was 53 and had almost certainly passed the age when his inheritance could appear in him. His death had nothing to do with his inherited disease. It was his heart. The doctor told Cosette it happened so fast he probably didn't know anything about it. Chapter 3. Old Friends. I wasn't living at Cosette's house when Douglas died. I was 20 and at university. My mother was dying, but I rushed to Cosette as soon as I heard. When I saw her, she was crying. Since then, I have learnt that family and neighbours are always ready with advice for a woman in Cosette's situation. She was 49, but looked older. Her hair was grey and her face tired, and she had put on weight. They told her she should move to a little place by the sea, or a cottage in the countryside, or a nice flat outside town. Cosette didn't refuse openly. She just smiled and shook her head. Later, I understood that she was silent because she had a different plan. One day, I heard one of Cosette's neighbors suggest that she ought to marry again. I was shocked. Those were days when life seemed to belong to the young and beautiful. I couldn't imagine Cosette having a man friend, a lover. She was too old. But I remembered the neighbor's words a year later, when Cosette, alone with me, said suddenly, "You always hear of men chasing after women. I'd like to be a woman who chases after men. Do you know what I'd like, Elizabeth? I'd like to be 30 again and steal everybody's husbands." And she laughed, a soft, hopeless laugh. I'm sitting now at my writing desk in this little house in Hammersmith, where I live. I'm looking at the things Cosette gave me. The typewriter, I wrote my first novel on it at Archangel Place. And the books. The works of Henry James are there, and among them, The Wings of the Dove. But this is not the same copy Belle picked up off my desk in the House of Stairs. She wanted to know the story, though Belle never read a book in her life. On the desk in front of me, I have a list of telephone numbers. I have found the numbers of some of the people I knew when I lived at Archangel Place. But why should any of them know where Belle is living now? They wouldn't want to know her. They may even hate her. I phone Elsa. I have not seen or spoken to her for a month or two, but I know it doesn't matter. We will always be friends. The phone rings, but there is no answer. I try Esmond and Felicity. They used to live outside London and probably still have that house, but they also have a flat in London. The daughter answers the phone. Those children were 3 and 6 when I first went with Elsa to Thornham Hall. Now they must be in their early 20s. The girl tells me that her parents still live at Thornham and gives me their number. Then she says, what did I want to ask her parents about? Was it something about that woman who killed somebody, Christine something? Christabel Sanger, I say. And then, but we called her Belle. She phoned my mother a few weeks ago. She'd just come out of prison, I think. My mother could tell you more. Why don't you phone her? I thank her and say goodbye. So, Belle is with us again. I feel a little sick. I won't phone Felicity yet. She'll want to know everything. She may ask me about Mark, or even about those last days at Archangel Place. I'll wait until tomorrow morning. Chapter 4. Christabel. After my mother's death, I went home to live with my father. but I spent my days with Elsa and at Cosette's house in Hampstead. Then I went for a week with Elsa to her relations in Essex. Esmond came to meet us from the station and drove us out into the countryside. Thornham Hall was an enormous place, with 15 bedrooms and a library and a morning room, and surrounded by its own land. A cottage or two stood near it, and a farm. Esmond and Felicity lived there, with Esmond's old mother. Felicity always needed entertainment, so she used to invite people to the house for parties, musical evenings, games and discussions. Sometimes, Elsa told me, the people from the cottage came up and joined them. They were friends of Felicity. Silas Sanger had, in fact, been an old boyfriend of Felicity. Now he lived with Christabel. He was a painter and a hard drinker who sometimes behaved very strangely. Nobody knew anything about Christabel. She was a mystery. I saw the painter's wife one afternoon as I sat looking out of a window with Felicity's daughter, Miranda. Silas Sanger's cottage was very small, with an untidy garden. The curtains at the windows were torn and dirty. A tall girl appeared, with her soft, fair, untidy hair piled up on top of her head, her long neck and narrow waist, and her unusual clothes. She reminded me of a woman in a French painting. The girl began to hang some washing on the line, but she seemed bored and unhappy. 2 days after this, there were guests at Thornham Hall. Felicity had arranged another of her little entertainments. She had invited the people from the cottage, but a note arrived from Belle saying she didn't want to come. Felicity smiled at us. She's proud of always saying what she means. Felicity believed that Belle never told lies, even when she knew she might hurt people's feelings. Felicity believed this, and we believed it too. But I was sorry. I had looked forward to meeting this mysterious woman. Later that evening, we were all sitting round the fire, playing a game, when the front door suddenly opened, and Belle Sanger came in.
"Would somebody come, please? Silas has shot himself. He was drunk. He was playing one of his games. I think he's dead."
Chapter 5. The House of Stairs. Felicity answers the phone. She doesn't sound surprised to hear me after all this time. She starts talking about her children. Then I tell her I have spoken to Miranda. "She told me you'd spoken to Belle Sanger. I thought you might give me Belle's address." Felicity is silent. Then her voice changes.
My dear, I don't have it. I have a phone number, 624-something.
But she can't remember exactly. She promises to call back. When I got home from Thornham after the death of Silas Sanger, I told Cosette about it all. Felicity had explained to me about Silas's games. He loved guns and used to play Russian roulette when he was drunk. When I saw him that night, he was lying in a pool of blood on the floor of his cottage. Belle was very calm. She said she had been upstairs and heard the shot. I believed her story then. Much later, I found out that a few hours before Silas died, his father had died, leaving him £10,000. The money came to Belle, and was just enough for her to live on. I didn't know this when I was telling my story to Cosette. I waited for her to give her opinion. Instead of that, she said, "I have bought a house." I looked at her. "It's in London, in Notting Hill. You like it. It's a big, tall house on 5 floors, with 106 stairs. I call it the House of Stairs."
"Notting Hill," I said.
It was a poor, dirty and dangerous part of London in those days.
"I won't be alone," she said. "People will come.
Don't you think people will come?
What people?
Her Hampstead neighbours? Her rich friends?
There are a lot of young people in that part of London, said Cosette.
But what will you do?
Live, said Cosette, smiling. I mean, I will just live there and wait and see.
Chapter 6. A Break with the Past. Felicity phoned me this morning. I asked her, why did Belle phone you?
Oh, Elizabeth, I thought you knew. She wanted your number.
I suddenly felt so happy I was ashamed of myself. Of course, Felicity had not known my number. She gave me Belle's, but I don't want to call Belle yet. Cosette didn't plan to live alone in the house of stairs. She was going to have one or two friends and relations with her. I finished university and travelled around Europe for a time. I had seen the house of stairs twice and hadn't liked it. It was big, old, dirty and cold, with too many stairs and dangerous windows. On my third visit, everything had changed. The rooms hadn't been repainted, but curtains had been put up, and there were new carpets and furniture. Cosette, too, was different. She'd thrown out all those unattractive suits and dresses. When I came in and went up the stairs to find her sitting at her table, she was wearing bright yellow with red and white flowers. And that wasn't the only change. She had lost weight, and her hair was a different colour.
The hairdresser says it makes me look 10 years younger.
I didn't want to say I couldn't see it myself, so I just said she looked very nice, much better. This seemed to make her happy. We climbed up the stairs, and she showed me my room.
You can come every weekend, said Cosette.
She didn't talk about Douglas. It seemed as if she had not only changed her style of living, but made a complete break with the past. That evening, people came, all of them young, students, hippies, I suppose. I don't know where they came from. Probably they came because it was free, the drink, the food, the cigarettes, and a bed or a floor to sleep on. But they also came because of Cosette herself. You see, Cosette was looking for a lover, though I didn't know it then. To me, she looked like these people's mother, but not an ordinary mother, because she let them do whatever they wanted. She smiled at those young men with their long hair and beards as they sat reading or playing the guitar. I didn't realize she was terribly lonely. So lonely that she would look for a lover among boys almost 30 years younger than her. It was only later, at Christmas, that she explained to me. That is when she talked to me about stealing other women's husbands.
I want to be 30 again, Elizabeth. You know, I'd been married for 11 years when I was 30. Girls married young in those days. But it's all changed now. I missed all this. Now I want to start living.
By Easter she had succeeded, and a man called Ivor Sitwell was her lover. Chapter 7. The Wings of the Dove. A little over 100 years ago, George Huntington described a disease which is now called Huntington's chorea. There is now a test to find out whether you have it, but it is complicated. They have to test your own blood and the blood of at least 7 other members of your family. I haven't got 7 living relations on my mother's side of the family. They have all died of Huntington's. My grandmother had 6 children. She didn't know that her father had Huntington's. She didn't know that her own children might inherit it. My mother showed the first signs of the illness when she was 36. Her hands and shoulders used to shake violently. In the end, she lost all control over her body. Perhaps 20 years ago, there were enough of the family left to give blood for the test. But it is too late now. I only have to wait 2 or 3 more years, and I will know. Without intending it, Ivor Sitwell brought Belle back into my life. At first it seemed impossible that any good could come from him. I remember the shock when I found him in the House of Stairs. Ivor was a writer, Cosette told me. He was a thin, unhealthy-looking man, with a bony face and very long brown hair. Most young men had long hair then, but Ivor wasn't very young. He was about 40. I disliked him immediately. He seemed to be interested only in himself and was usually rude to Cosette. It was obvious to me that he was using her. He wanted her money. I felt lost, like a child who finds out that her mother has a lover. But Ivor didn't stay for long. Cosette saw him one day lying in the park with a girl he had met at the house. She couldn't forgive him. He had betrayed her, and refused to let him in the house again. But all this was in the future. Ivor Sitwell was still living with Cosette and sharing her bed and insulting her. Then one day he arranged that Cosette and I should meet a friend of his. This is where I saw Belle again, at this friend's house. Ivor had told us that there was a young woman who had a room in the house. Cosette and I arrived late, but Ivor wasn't there. We waited with Ivor's friend. Then I heard the front door open and Ivor talking with somebody. The door to the room opened, and he came in with Belle. Ivor immediately began telling us how he had met Belle on the steps outside. I don't know if she recognized me, or if Ivor had already told her about the visitors. She looked at me and said very calmly, "Hello, Lizzie," as if we had last seen each other the day before. She was all in black, like Millie Thiele in The Wings of the Dove. Ivor tried to start a conversation with her, but she turned her back on him. Belle said to me, "Come up and see where I live." So I left the room and went upstairs with Belle. She had lived there since she left Thornham, she told me. There was very little in her room except for the bed, a table and a chair. "What do you do?" I asked. "Do you work?" "I don't work." She looked pleased when she said this. "I don't work at all. I'm never going to work." "Then you're rich?" Her eyes opened wide. I'm not rich. But I hate working. I've got just enough to live on without working, if I live in a place like this." She laughed, and her face was beautiful. I was excited by her. But what did I want of her? Did I want a friend? Did I want somebody to talk to and be with? And what did she want? I know now, of course I know, but I didn't know then. She was young and beautiful and healthy and intelligent, but she chose to live in that dark little room in that dirty house, without a job or a future, and I discovered later that she didn't have a lover or even many friends. That September, Cosette and I went to Italy together. She had intended to go with Ivor, but by that time Ivor had gone. In Florence, at the Uffizi, there is a painting by Bronzini of Lucrezia Panciatichi. This is the painting that Henry James describes in The Wings of the Dove. The woman in the painting looks like Millie Thiele, James's heroine. She also looked a lot like Belle. I bought a copy of the picture while I was in Italy and hung it in my bedroom in the House of Stairs when I got back. Chapter 8. Meeting Belle Again. I was standing in front of this picture in my room this afternoon when Belle phoned. This picture has followed me everywhere since the House of Stairs was sold. Sometimes it has seemed to bring bad luck, so I have been afraid to have it on the wall. But 3 days ago, I hung it here in my study. It is years since I have looked at it. And there are things I never noticed before. For example, the fact that Lucrezia is wearing a single ring with a very dark stone in it. which may even be a bloodstone.
She only said, "Hello," but I didn't doubt for a second that it was her.
I was silent in shock.
"It's Belle."
"I know," I said. "Oh, I know." I sat down, suddenly feeling a great tiredness.
"Will you come and see me?" she said.
"That is why I am here, sitting opposite her now. The room is very like the room in Ivor's friend's house, where I was first alone with her. There is a bed, a table, a chair, and a couple of suitcases. Belle tells me that they found this place for her when she came out of prison. They have also found a job for her in a shop. She is very changed in appearance, though still thin and straight, with that head held high on her long neck. There are lines on her face. She wears black. I haven't touched her yet. I haven't shaken her hand or kissed her. When I came to the door and she brought me up here, she remembered.
Are you past the age? Are you safe yet?
It seemed the kindest thing.
Nearly, I said. When Cosette and I came back from Italy, Belle had moved away from Ivor's friend's house and disappeared. She had gone without leaving a message for me. Perhaps she was with a man or a woman. Or perhaps she just couldn't pay for the room anymore. She had never spoken of any friend or relation, or even of mother, father, brothers or sisters. I knew very little about her, except that she was very honest about her feelings and opinions, while she knew everything about me. Cosette had given me a room near the top of the house as a writing room. I wrote my first three books there. That winter of 1969, I started to write my first novel, using Cosette's old typewriter. Chapter 9. Mark. In the spring, I went with a boyfriend to the theatre, and afterwards to the theatre's café. It was months since I had seen Belle, but she was in the café that night. I saw her sitting at a table in the corner with two other girls and two men. One of these men was very much like her in appearance, darker but with the same sort of face. Before I reached the table and said hello to her, he got up and went to the food bar. "Is that your brother?" I said. She turned to look at him for a moment. Then she nodded. "Yes. Yes, it is. Good looking, isn't he?" "He's like you. Perhaps you're right. Do you like him? Would you like to meet him?" "I'm with somebody," I said, "and I have to go." And then, "Why don't you come round? I'd love to see you." That was the first time I saw Mark. Perhaps it was true that I liked him. He was very attractive. But my boyfriend was getting jealous, and I soon forgot Mark. I naturally didn't know he was going to be so important in our lives. I only thought of Belle, hoping she would come. A week later, she came. There was a crowd of us in the living room with Cosette. I remember Cosette was wearing the bloodstone, probably to match her new dark green dress. She still hadn't found the lover she wanted. Belle looked around at the other people in the room, the couple lying on the floor, the boy playing the guitar. Then she went up to Cosette, shook her hand and spoke to her. But she didn't waste any time with the others. She had come to see me. "Can we go up to your room?" I understood she meant the room I wrote in, not my bedroom. On the stairs, there were 106, remember, to the top, 95 to my writing room, she said, "They're all using her, aren't they? All getting something from her. Does she know?" "I don't think that matters to her." "It would matter to me. I throw them out." "Cosette would never do that." Belle never read a book, but if there were books lying around, she used to pick them up and look at them. We lit cigarettes, and she walked about the room looking at everything. She was very surprised that I was writing a novel.
It was raining when the time came for her to go. She didn't want to tell me her address, and said she didn't have a phone.
I could get a taxi, she said, but I haven't got enough money, and if Cosette knows, she'll pay for it. I don't want that.
Nobody else among Cosette's visitors thought like that. Belle was strangely pure, I thought. She just wanted to borrow a raincoat. So we went downstairs to my bedroom. I opened the door, forgetting that the picture of Lucrezia was hanging on the opposite wall. The light came on, and Belle looked straight at the picture. She stood silent in front of it, while I looked for the coat. Then, "That's me," she said. I was embarrassed. "It was painted about 400 years before you were born." "It's still me." "Where did you get it? Did you put it there because it looks like me?" "Yes," I said. I held out my black raincoat and she put it on. Then Belle took my face in her hands and kissed my mouth. I was shaking, but I said very lightly, "You mustn't get wet." Until they came and took her away, I never lost Belle again after that. She often came to see me at the House of Stairs. We used to talk a lot about other people, about the people who lived in the house and those who passed through it. Belle was as interested in people as I was. That was one of the things I liked so very much about her. She really wanted to get inside people's heads and know them. I learned a lot from Belle. One day we were talking about Ivor Sitwell. "Cosette is lucky he's gone," she said. "Do you think she'd like somebody else?" "She'd like somebody she could love, and who would love her, wouldn't we all?" Belle gave me a strange look. She didn't reply. "Why did Cosette marry Douglas?" I wondered aloud.
"Women get married to have somebody who will keep them," Belle said quite seriously. "They get married to be safe."
I asked her about Silas. Why had she married Silas? She was at art school, she told me, and she met Silas there. He was her teacher. Then he lost his job. "So you didn't marry to have somebody who would keep you?" I said.
"Yes, I did, partly. I knew he had an old dad who was ill and who'd leave him something. In fact, I thought it was more than it was. But I wasn't completely wrong, was I? I did get it. And it keeps me. Just."
We said good night soon after that, and I went down to my own room. Belle was going to stay the night in the room at the top. I was pleased that at last I had found out something about Belle's past. I didn't realize, like everybody, I believed Belle was always honest, that most of her story was a lie. Chapter 10. The Living Lucrezia. In Venezuela, there is a village where nearly everybody has Huntington's chorea. I read this in today's paper. Huntington's has become a fashionable disease. I will be 40 next week, and Belle was right. I am probably safe now. I have been to meet Belle this morning, after her first day at the shop. She was surprised to see me, but very pleased. She has come home with me. I didn't ask her. Somehow, she decided. I am sitting opposite her now with a glass in my hand. We have been talking for almost 2 hours, but she hasn't spoken about Mark or Cosette. In the spring, Cosette was ill. In fact, she wasn't really ill at all, but she was frightened, and she frightened me. Because I loved her so much, I didn't want to lose her. I was sure that she was dying of cancer, and I told Belle about my fears.
"When will you know what's wrong with her?"
"In about a week," I said. I didn't see Belle for some time after that conversation. She had never wanted to tell me where she was living, but by this time I had found out that she went to her mother's flat in Harlesden. When she left Ivor's friend's house, she said, she hadn't had anywhere to go, and her mother wasn't well. She needed somebody with her. Cosette went into hospital, and they found it was nothing serious. When I next saw Belle, it seemed as if she had forgotten about it, so I never talked to her about it again. Cosette wanted Belle to come and live at the House of Stairs. "Belle has to live with her mother," I said.
"I'm sure there's room for your mother, too," Belle laughed.
"I'll think about it, Cosette." But Cosette made us go up to the top, into the room above my writing room. She apologized for the room, the 106 stairs, the low ceiling, and dangerous window.
"I'll have something done to make it safe," Cosette said.
The window was frightening when you stood close to it. It came right down to the floor, and when it was open, it was like a doorway without a door. You looked down into the garden almost 14 meters below. Nothing was done about the window, though. And although she had to look after her mother, Belle stayed and slept up there that night. The next day, she told me she had met a friend of her mother's who might be able to come and share her mother's house. A week later, we were looking through Cosette's clothes. Cosette was going to the theatre and wanted to find something suitable to wear. We found a long red dress that reminded me of the dress that Lucrezia Panciatichi is wearing in Bronzini's painting.
"Have it," said Cosette. "I'm never going to wear it again."
Belle was in her usual dusty black. We were alone in the house, Belle, Cosette, and I. "I want you to put the dress on," I said to Belle. At first she refused. She said it was silly, her hair was wrong, and she hadn't any jewelry. But as she stood there, looking at the picture, she started to like the idea. While she was changing, I went down to Cosette's room. We were talking about the book I had just finished, when the door opened and Belle came in, or Lucrezia Panciatichi came in, or Milly Thiel. She had done her hair to look like the picture. Instead of smiling at our delight, she stood seriously, then sat in a chair and became the picture completely. Cosette found the bloodstone and put it on her finger. Belle was calm, not laughing, not even smiling. Afterwards, Belle and I went up to sleep. The stairs were dark. Belle took my hand in hers and led me. In my room, the light was soft, coming from the small bed lamp. The painted Lucrezia looked down at the living Lucrezia. Belle pushed the door closed with her toe. Oh, the house was so silent. We kissed and entered each other's arms. Chapter 11. In Love. Today is Sunday. I never write on Sundays, and Belle doesn't have to go to work in the shop. The job makes her very tired. She goes to sleep as soon as she comes home. By home, I mean my house. She has returned here every day. When she came down this morning, smoking her first cigarette of the day, she seemed less ghostly, younger and fresher looking. She even smiled. As we sat opposite each other later on, we knew that we had to talk. She began. "Has Felicity ever told you she thought I might be responsible for Silas's death?" I nodded. "Nobody said anything about it at my trial, did they? All that about my childhood came out, all that. And I'd forgotten it. I'd forgotten about Susan. But that was why I went to prison for so long. They found out about Susan. But they never found out about Silas." She took another cigarette and lit it. "I killed him," she said. "Well, isn't it obvious?" And she told me how she had fixed Silas's gun so that the game of Russian roulette would kill him. "If it's true that you did it, why did you do it?" "I was so sick of him, so bored. He married me to get a servant. God, I hated him."
"Why didn't you divorce him?"
She looked at me strangely. "His old father was dying, wasn't he? And he was rich. Well, Silas said he was. So when the telegram came saying his father was dead, I didn't show it to him. I kept it to myself, and fixed his gun. Another cigarette. Have you still got that picture?
What picture, Belle?
Though I knew. Of course I knew. The one of the girl in the red dress that somebody wrote a book about.
It's in my writing room, I said.
I haven't been in there yet, she said. And then, can we go out? I'd like to go down to the river and go to a pub. Could we find a pub and eat there?
I have never wanted any other woman before or since. On the other hand, I never felt it was a shocking thing. It is impossible for me to say how I felt then, except that I was in love. Belle moved into the top room in the house of stairs. I don't know if Cosette knew about us, but I think she didn't. She probably saw us only as best friends. Belle was in my writing room one day in early autumn, as I was just finishing work. She picked up a book off my desk and asked, "Is this the one about the girl that looks like me?"
"No, that's The Wings of the Dove."
I found my copy of James's novel and gave it to her.
"What's it about?" she asked.
So, sitting there on the floor with Belle next to me, I told her the story of The Wings of the Dove. That was all, nothing more. But Millie Thiel stayed in her memory. I suppose the painting made her remember it. She said slowly, wonderingly,
"What a clever idea."
James was clever. There has never been a cleverer novelist. Chapter 12. Waiting for a Man. The first time Mark came to Archangel Place, there were about 8 people living in the house of stairs. Belle was there, of course. In the autumn of 1972, she had gone back to her mother in Harlesden for a time. I know now that Belle didn't have a mother in Harlesden, that her parents were living in a small town by the sea, trying to forget that they were parents. But I didn't know it then. I believed Belle when she said she had to go home for a time. I'm sure that Belle's feelings for me were once as real as mine for her, but they had now begun to weaken. Her thoughts were somewhere else. I had finished my second book, and I was busy. Then she went back to her mother's. There was an awful evening when we sat together in the garden, Cosette and I. Each of us was feeling lonely. I remember Cosette said, "Why does nobody come any more?" I put my arms around her. I knew she was waiting for a man to come, a lover, a husband. Women are usually shy about saying they need a man. Not Cosette. She said it to everybody. Her life was sad. The man hadn't come. But 2 days later he came. Belle brought him. She had been absent for 2 or 3 weeks, then reappeared in the house of stairs as if she had never been away. "My brother's coming this evening," she said. "Is that all right?" Mark, how can I describe him? He was simply the best-looking man I have ever known, and one of the nicest, or at least I thought so for a long time. He was always kind, warm and gentle. He was older than Belle, with brown skin and hair. Cosette wasn't looking very good that evening. Her hair was untidy and she had put on weight again. Any of the other young women in the room had a better chance than her. When Mark walked in, you could see all their eyes on him. It was the way he moved as well as his appearance. He walked like a dancer. It was sad to see that Cosette had already stopped hoping. She put out her hand to him with a half smile. Mark didn't talk about himself. Belle told me he was an actor and worked in radio, and that he was single. Mark was a listener, and for a time we knew only that he was pleasant and interesting. Later, at dinner, when Cosette made a joke, he laughed, and I saw Cosette redden. I was afraid for her. I was already afraid. Cosette fell in love with him that evening. I saw the way she looked at him, and I watched fearfully.
It would pass, I thought. It must pass. A week later he would be forgotten. But Cosette wasn't going to let that happen. She wasn't going to let him get away. She wanted to fix a date for his next visit. She knew that Belle's birthday, her 30th, was coming soon. So she invited Mark to Belle's birthday party. Her face was shining. It was impossible not to see her happiness. Later that night, lying in bed next to Belle, I said to her, "Cosette is going to fall in love with Mark. She's in love with him already. I'd like to stop it somehow."
"Why? Because you're afraid he'll make her unhappy?"
"But he'll be different. He won't be like that Ivor person. Mark will be kind to her. You'll see." This morning we went shopping together, Belle and I. She has lost the job in the shop and is staying with me. She doesn't say it, but I know she is going to stay here. Once this was my dream. Now I don't want it at all. Belle is too much for me. Her past is too much, the thing she has done. It has made me nervous, all of it. It is causing the kind of worry that doctors have always warned me about. Sometimes my hand shakes. My 40th birthday has passed and gone. Belle and I went out to dinner. Afterwards I tried to get her to talk about Mark and Cosette. But she talked about Silas. "Do you want to know how I really met Silas?" "It was in the children's home. The home was a big house with big children mixed up with little children. It was one of those modern ideas they wanted to try out. A disaster, actually. Give me my cigarettes, will you? They put me in there when I was 16. That was in 1958. But they weren't modern enough to send me to school. I went out to work. I wanted to get away. Silas came to the home sometimes. A relation of his had a child there. Felicity was his girlfriend then. So I got him away from her and got married to him. That way I got out."
"Is that true, Belle?"
"Of course it is." I couldn't control the painful, nervous movements in my neck and shoulders. "Where was Mark then?" I said. "What was Mark doing?" She jumped up and ran out of the room. Mark came to the party Cosette gave for Belle's birthday. At that party, Cosette gave Belle the bloodstone ring. Mark didn't stay long. He went home a little after midnight. Cosette wanted him to come back the following evening to dinner, but Mark refused politely. I was angry with him. It was unkind. Or was he trying to make himself more interesting, difficult to get? Cosette watched him leave. Then we were alone. "I'd give everything I've got if I could be young again," Cosette said.